On the 28th of February, the United States and Israel launched a major attack on Iran's leadership and military. U.S. President Donald Trump said the goal was to prevent Iran from obtaining a nuclear weapon and to defend the American people. Hours later, Iran's supreme leader Ayatollah Ali Khamenei and several military officials were confirmed dead. Now, Iran has since retaliated by launching strikes against Israeli and U.S. military targets across the Middle East, including several Gulf nations like the UAE. Hello everyone, Tiffany here on a special episode of the Deep Dive podcast. Leaders across Southeast Asia, including Singapore, have called for restraint and urged more diplomatic talks. Singapore Senior Minister Lee Hsien Loong also warned that tensions in the Middle East will send ripple effects on energy prices. So, what's likely to happen next? And how would the conflict drive a price war with our shipping and energy needs? With us to discuss this today, we have Dr. Jean-Lou Saman, Senior Research Fellow at the Middle East Institute of the National University of Singapore.
Hello, Tiffany. Thank you very much for the invitation.
And Eddie Lowe, Chief Investment Officer of Maybank Group Wealth Management.
Hi, everyone. This is Eddie here. Thanks for having me.
All right. Welcome, gentlemen. So now, given that the U.S. had increased military presence in the Middle East over the past few weeks, did this joint attack with Israel come as a surprise, Jean-Lou?
No, I mean, it doesn't come as a surprise for several reasons. First, as you just mentioned, this was the biggest military buildup from the U.S. in the region in two decades. Basically, the last time we saw that deployment of U.S. military assets, this was before the invasion of Iraq in 2003. So that was not a surprise. The second aspect is that from the beginning, the negotiations between the Trump administration and the Iranian regime were doomed to fail because the Trump administration had maximalist demands. And if the Iranian regime was to accept on all those demands, this was basically signaling the end of the regime. So for regime survival, the Iranians just couldn't accept the deal with the Trump administration. So both diplomatically and militarily, unfortunately, this was not a surprise.
Okay, but what was the trigger this time? Like, what happened, you know, recently that really caused, you know, the U.S. to step in?
Well, I think you had several elements. We can see what's happening today as the sequel of the previous operation of June last year, when the Israelis and the Americans already launched an operation, which was at the time with a more limited objective. I think there was greater confidence after that previous operation that the U.S. and Israelis could actually lead to the collapse of the regime. There was also, as I said, the realization probably from the White House that that negotiations would go nowhere. And at a certain point, probably the fact that Donald Trump himself almost put himself in a position where he mentioned that he would provide support to the protesters, that if the regime, the Iranian regime, was to punish, was to repress the protesters, this would be a red line for him. So he found himself in a position where it was very difficult for him to maintain his credibility politically without demonstrating force like we see with this operation.
Eddie, I want to bring you into the picture right now. What's been the impact on the market so far, and what are we, you know, going to be seeing in maybe the coming week?
Right. I think in terms of equities, obviously U.S. stock futures, no surprise, is actually pointing lower. And on the flip side, oil, energy prices, oil prices spike higher. I think Brent at one point reached $80 per barrel. Now has heated a little bit, but still, you know, at least well above the levels before the strike. Gold actually also benefited from safe haven demand, which is not surprise to us as well.
And what's the end game here? Help us to understand. What does U.S. and Israel really want out of this, Jean-Lou?
Well, first of all, the thing which is probably going to be very complex to follow is the fact that the US and Israel might not have the same objectives, because the national security interests at stake are not the same. For Israel, the Iranian regime has always been a very immediate threat to its interests, to its territory. This is more like a distant threat for the US. So that's the first thing. But clearly, when you look at the speech, the first speech that Donald Trump gave when he announced this operation, this is very different from last year's military operation. He clearly said that, one, we should expect an intervention for coming days, if not coming weeks. So this is not going to be a short intervention. And that relates to the second point, which is that the objective is pretty ambitious. We're talking very clearly about regime change. Donald Trump is not suggesting that the US is going to invade the country, but he's clearly saying that the air campaign that we are witnessing is targeting all the infrastructure, the leadership of the Iranian regime, and he's calling very explicitly on the Iranian people to take power. So that also explains why the Iranians reacted the way they did, which is unprecedented wave of attacks across the region, because they understand that this time is very different, that this is not going to be solved in just a few days. This is not a matter of escalation for a few days and then everyone tries to restrain. No, this is like a real war, and a war that has not been seen in the region for decades.
So this is not so much of the nuclear threat that Iran could possibly pose.
From the Trump point of view, there is that aspect. There is the nuclear dimension, and Donald Trump mentioned it in his speech. But from the beginning, this was not just about the nuclear program. There's the nuclear program. But you have also what we call the delivery systems, which designate the ballistic missiles that Iran already has and already used across the region. And that is a direct threat to Israel, as we've seen over the last days. It is also a direct threat to US military bases across the region. In addition to that, there was also a lot of tensions between the US and Iran regarding the Iranian support to what we call its proxies, non-state actors that operate across the region with Iranian military support. So we're talking about Hezbollah in Lebanon, we're talking about Hamas in the Gaza Strip, or we're talking about the Houthis in Yemen. So all those different aspects explain also why the negotiations failed.
Iran has vowed to retaliate, and you mentioned about, these allies in the region that it has. How effective would that retaliation be? And, is there a sort of a, are we thinking where could it possibly be in the region or even beyond that?
On the short term, if you look at the diplomatic aspect, the Iranian attacks across the region, in particular on Gulf states, backfired, I would say, diplomatically, in the sense that we saw Gulf states condemning Iran's action. And in a way, it is going to antagonize the only states in the region that were the fence sitters, in a sense, the Gulf states such as the UAE, Kuwait, Qatar, Oman, that were trying to stay away from that conflict. The fact that Iran decided to attack them, and at the end of the day, these are countries that rely on US security support. They picked the side of the US. At the same time, if the war drags on, which is what we see today, I mean, we will probably see a lot of issues regarding the disruption of infrastructures in the Gulf. And Eddie will probably give a lot of details on that with regards to the Strait of Hormuz, or just the fact that the air traffic, the fact that you have airports such as the one in Doha or the one in Dubai, which are some of the biggest airports in the world that are disrupted at the moment. This is, again, unprecedented. So on that, I guess the Iranians hope that this will force the US to change its strategy. But Honestly, I doubt at this stage that the U.S. administration or the Israelis are going to change their strategy because of that.
Eddie, so commercial ship traffic through the Strait of Hormuz has significantly slowed since the strikes on Iran. So can you maybe just give us a an overview? How significant is this area for the world, particularly even, you know, our part of the world, Southeast Asia?
Right. If I were to take a step back, just adding on to what John Wu has actually said, this time around, it definitely appears that U.S. is making a stronger push for regime change in Iran versus the episode last June. And that is actually leading to or triggering stronger responses from Iran. I think not only had they started to attack Israel, they also went out there to attack U.S. bases in the other Gulf countries. I think there are reports to say they have actually either closed or disrupted flows, traffic, and Strait of Hormuz, which is very important because they account for like 20-30% of global oil shipment as well as LNG, right? And a lot of these flows come to our part of the world. If there were to be a prolonged disruption, right, that will actually have a negative impact on supply chains, right? Companies and businesses are not able to get their hands on oil, or if they were to get their hands on oil, that will come at a, you know, hefty risk premium. So I think that is something that we have to be prepared for as a negative scenario. But if I can, you know, if I may actually just to add a little bit on what is driving US actually for this joint attack. Obviously, as John Liu has pointed out, it's a long-standing issue. It's not just about UPIP program. There are also other issues with the proxies, right? And somehow, we are thinking that we wonder if that's got to do also with the upcoming midterm elections this year in the U.S., where, you know, U.S., you know, President Trump always liked to win, right? He talked about trade, tariffs, and then perhaps this is also another win that he can put in his pocket. And hopefully that would actually help to boost the Republican, you know, confidence and also support in the upcoming midterm elections. But having said that, we are not sure if Trump really wants to see a prolonged conflict leading to a full-blown oil crisis like what we have seen in the 1970s. Because what that means is we're going to get see, you know, oil prices potentially staying above $100 per barrel. Inflation is going to shoot up, including those in the U.S. And that's not going to help U.S. economy. That's not going to help cost of living in the U.S. And that's not going to help the Republicans in the upcoming midterm election.
Jean-Luc, do you agree that that is, you know, to not have a prolonged war is Donald Trump's end goal here?
We know for sure is that Donald Trump likes wars that are short and without any casualty for U.S. troops. Having said that, the decision to go to war here goes against domestic politics, I would say, in the U.S. Because if you look at the polls before the war, the majority of Americans were against that war, and they don't see, I would say rightly so, they don't see the reason why the U.S. as national security interests would be so at stake that it requires that intervention. I think it's a big gamble from Trump, but there are several reasons where I think we can understand why he went, he took that risk. I think there's this psychological aspect in particular. First, the fact that the previous operations he conducted, either during this presidency or the first presidency, he was, in a way, very lucky. He didn't have a long conflict. So there might have been also an element of overconfidence, especially in the current White House environment. I assume that after the Venezuela attack of January, there might have been this environment where the U.S. feels it can very quickly intervene anywhere where it wants. And then at the same time, as I mentioned, you had a President Trump that personally engaged his own credibility on the Iranian file. So he may feel he has to do something about it. But I would agree with Eddie in the sense that If there's one aspect that Donald Trump follows, it's the economic and the business indicators. If he feels that there are negative aspects, detrimental aspects to the war because of this intervention, he will try to do something. But there's also an element that we have to keep in mind is that the moment a war starts, it has its own logic. Donald Trump cannot just say that's the end of the conflict. I'm pretty sure that what he started last weekend will have its own logic in with regards to the Strait of Hormuz, with regards to the oil prices. It's not just the moment where Donald Trump decides war is over that we will see the end of the economic consequences.
Exactly, exactly. Because I think according to Bob McNally, who was the White House energy advisor to former President George W. Bush, he did say that the prolonged closure of the Strait of Hormuz is a guaranteed global recession. Now, Eddie, I want to come to you because this is the R word we really, really hate to hear, right? So if this goes on, are we really expecting to see that at some point a global recession might take place?
There is a risk that accidents happen, some miscalculation occur that potentially will lead to a prolonged crisis. And then we see oil prices staying at above $100 per barrel, okay, for example, to the rest of the year. A little bit like, as I mentioned, 1970s, or even if you recall as recently as 2022, where we saw, because of Russia-Ukraine war, oil prices surging, and then we saw inflation surging as well. That's going to have a negative impact on both growth as well as inflation, what we call stagflation, right? And it makes it very tricky for policymakers, including the central banks, right? Because usually when growth, should growth slow down, then the central banks will say, oh, okay, I'm going to cut rates to help support growth. But the problem is if you have slower growth, but at the same time, higher inflation, then they have to weigh, should I cut rates or should I not cut rates? So that stagflation is always very tricky for policymakers. And we hope we don't see that.
Yeah, I certainly hope so. And to bring it closer, even closer back to home. So around 95% of our electricity is produced by imported natural gas. And most of our, deep dive audience really care as well about how this will affect, their wallets at the end of the day. So how will Singaporeans be affected, especially when it comes to our energy needs and transportation? I know you mentioned that oil prices are going to increase, but help the average, person on the street understand when are we going to see our electricity bills increase, possibly by how much? Is this the worst that we are going to be facing in time to come?
I think suffice to say, higher oil prices, higher natural gas prices globally will also have a spillover effect on the electricity prices in Singapore.
And it's not just energy as well, right? I mean, because we talked about Hormuz earlier on, so there's going to be a lot felt, I guess, in the shipping sector. Maybe things to, do with our the things that we're importing in as well from different parts of the world. How quickly do you think we would feel this? Is this going to take weeks, months, or maybe even up to a year?
Well, I wouldn't say. I think in the immediate future, we probably won't feel it. Right, depending on how far or low this conflict de-escalate. Obviously, if it were to extend to 2 to 3 months, I think we will start to feel it a little bit more in terms of the speed of us getting the goods and also shipping costs actually rising, affecting goods prices. But as of now, even as we speak, I think one of the most immediate impact that I'm seeing is actually tourism. I've got friends, business contacts planning to visit Middle East, Dubai, for example. They have to cancel their trips right now. So that is actually a very, very real impact that we are seeing right today. And that's going to have a negative impact on the economy as well.
And I think right now the situation will continue to remain fluid. I mean, things are changing by the hour. What are the possible chain reactions if this conflict escalates, Jean-Lou?
I know it's a big concern in Singapore and I would say in Asia. The question of China or Russia intervening and this regional conflict turning into a global war. I'll say a positive thing, one of the few for our discussion, which is that I very doubt that either China or Russia is going to get into the conflict. China doesn't consider Iran as an ally. If we look at China's policy over the past 3 years of conflict between Israel and Iran, clearly, China tries to stay as much as possible away from the Middle East conflict. And what we saw is basically the past days, China's very predictable condemnations of the operation, but nothing more. So that's one thing I would say that we're not going to see, except that there's a black swan. We never know, but it's very unlikely. Having said that, the big question, again, will be the length of this conflict. What we're going to see probably at least for the coming week is more of the same in terms of airstrikes conducted by the Israelis and the Americans. And one important development that I would say nobody really can anticipate is things on the ground inside Iran. As I mentioned, there's no plan at the moment for a U.S. ground intervention. So the key question to follow is the resilience of the Iranian regime, especially after the death of the supreme leader, the resilience in particular of the Revolutionary Guard, which are this kind of military entity that is controlling most of the big decisions, and what the protesters are going to be able to do inside Iran. As I said, the U.S., and in particular Donald Trump, is betting on the protesters taking power. I have very big doubts that we will see, let's say, a peaceful transition inside the country. The two options I see is either the military, so the Revolutionary Guards, taking control and maintaining a tight grip on the regime, or we see a civil war, just like we saw, for instance, in Libya, in Iraq, after the fall of Saddam Hussein. Both cases are very worrisome, because if we look at Iran, this has, again, a big economic strength, big economic implication for the region. But that's, I would say, the big unknown, how things are going to turn out domestically inside Iran.
Is it also an unknown who is likely to replace the supreme leader?
When you have targeted killings, like if the Israelis have been doing for decades, you can assume that the Iranians have had plans for a long time. So the question is how strong the chain of command can remain, because we have the killing of the supreme leader, but the Israelis are also saying that they killed more than 40 military commanders at the same time during the past days. So it's very difficult to measure how weakened their chain of command is at the moment. So again, question being the resilience of the military structure vis-a-vis the operation from the U.S. and the Israelis, but also vis-a-vis the protesters in the streets, because we should not forget that this started a few weeks ago with big protests in the streets against the regime. So it's not like you have a national unity behind the regime.
If I may just add a little bit on China. China is actually one country that we're also watching very closely as well. As what Jean-Lou mentioned, I think it will be good if China were to just say, but not join in. Or else, you know, the whole situation may escalate into a global conflict. But bearing in mind that, Iran, China, they may not be the closest friends, but China does import a large majority of Iranian oil, right? So they do need the oil export from Iran. Of course, they can seek alternatives now, if need be, but still there's this strategic partnership. We are also watching who the new supreme leader or the new Iranian leadership will be. At the end of the day, I think you do need to give them a little bit of space. I think US do need to give them a little bit of space, because if you push them too hard, desperate people take desperate measures, right? If they've got nothing to lose, then they may just resort to anything, right? So that's something that we do not wish to see. So at the end of the day, we still hope and believe that while we are seeing further escalation in the near term, hopefully there will be eventual de-escalation of the situation.
I think at the end of the day, I mean, we do see how everything has, there's always going to be a chain reaction at the end of the day. But thank you so much, gentlemen, for coming in today, giving us a quick analysis of the situation on the Deep Dive podcast. I think many things will be changing in the next, few days. Donald Trump has already said that it is going to be, even up to maybe even a month. So, I guess anybody who is interested to find out more, they can stay tuned on CNA. There will be a lot more coverage on this. Special thanks to the team behind this episode. We have Junaini Johari, Ho Pei Ning, Joanne Chan, and Charlene Tan. Video by Zikri Aiman and sound by Joseph Jeremiah Jacob. I'll see you all in the next episode.